This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars, episode 95, was recorded on March 2nd, 2020. I'm Eric Townsend. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. I'll tell you how to claim a free copy of their new guide to the best investing books ever written at the end of this episode. Brent Johnson is back with us this week from Santiago Capital. Listeners, as usual, Brent put together a terrific slide deck for today's interview. It's got some great graphs and charts that we are going to be referring to in the interview, so I strongly encourage you to download it. You'll find the download link in the description of this podcast on our homepage at macrovoices.com next to Brent's picture. Brent, it's been a while. It's great to have you back on the show because, needless to say, with the COVID-19 story finally hitting the tape, I've been waiting for that to happen for a month. It seems like the world has woken up to it. I'm going to just start this one by admitting I got the U.S. dollar reaction wrong. I was really sure that the COVID-19 story could only be good for the U.S. dollar. And what we've seen in the last couple of days has been, really to my surprise, dollar moving down. And I don't think it's because everybody's expecting there to be accommodation from the Fed, because although I do expect that to happen, the BOJ and other central banks actually moved first. So I don't get it. What's going on here? Give us the big picture of how you see this market.
Well, thanks for having me back, Eric. It's been a couple months and I'm excited to be back and talk to you. I love these markets, so I'm loving this right now. You know, I'll push back a little bit on your idea on the dollar. I think a lot of it is, you know, people expecting not just a rate cut, but multiple rate cuts now from the Fed. So I think that has a lot to do with it. It doesn't have everything to do with it, but all the central bankers are going to get involved. Everybody's going to, you know, help the markets to the extent that they can. And I think a lot of this is, you know, people are freaking out.
Finally.
And perhaps rightfully so. You know, I think the dollar's going to, you know, it once again, it ran up to almost 100 level and backed off. And, you know, it might back off to 95. I don't know. It's been bouncing around between 95 and a dollar for, you know, a year or two now. And it might bounce around between 95 and a dollar for another 6 months or so leading up to the election. You know, I don't have a crystal ball that tells me the timing. I'm convinced it's going to break through the top, but it might not be for a while. But here's the interesting thing. And I get pushed back on my milkshake theory a lot because, you know, it just hasn't broken out. Well, you know what? It just hasn't broken down either. And the thing is the dollar doesn't even have to break out for the milkshake to play out. The dollar is doing plenty of damage around the world with it right here, you know, 97 or 98, whatever it is right now. The rest of the world is awash in dollar debt. We are too. We're going to feel the pain, but they're going to feel it first. And so, you know, I think it's just a matter of time before the dollar breaks out. The Fed is going to do everything they can to keep it low. They'll come out with rate cuts. They may do more QE, but the rest of the world's going to do the same. And, you know, I got accused one time of just saying the same thing over and over. Well, I haven't seen anything at all to tell me that I need to change course yet. So I'm sticking to it.
Well, Brent, I want to ask you a question then, because there's something I see that could change my course. I've been with you, as you know, for a long time, thinking dollar bullish. Here's the thing. I think that President Trump, to my surprise, has really handled this COVID-19 situation very poorly. I think that his minimizing it is going to come back to fight him. And something where I disagree strongly with Republicans is they all seem to think Bernie is the guy that would be the best thing for Trump, would be Bernie to get the nomination, because it's easy to beat Bernie. My contention is that if the United States has just been through a pandemic breakout, the guy who wants to give away healthcare is not so easy to beat after all. And I think that markets are going to start pricing in the possibility of a Bernie Sanders presidency. Not a certainty, but at least a real possibility, whereas frankly, I don't think markets previously took that scenario as even plausible. To me, if Bernie Sanders were president, that's dollar negative. Do you see it differently?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think you make a very good point. We're, you know, I think the only person that has an opportunity to beat Trump is Bernie. Now, to be clear, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think Bernie will beat Trump. But if anybody was going to beat him, I think that Bernie would be the only person able to do so, because perhaps Bernie could get a bigger turnout than maybe a Biden or, you know, one of the other candidates. And so you have to factor that in. And, you know, I think to your point about, will the market start pricing that in? I mean, I really do think, you know, Trump got criticized for this for the other day. But, you know, I think the market selling off, it's definitely related to COVID. I'm not, you know, not going to diminish that. But I think it is also due to the fact that the Democrats have just put up such a crazy, you know, cadre of people to become president. And, you know, you see their actions in Iowa and New Hampshire and then Nevada. I mean, it's not an impressive group of people. And I think Trump's right. If any of them get into office, that's not necessarily good for markets. I mean, I think that was starting to get priced in. I'll tell you what, if Bernie has a good showing tomorrow on Super Tuesday, I think that would be bad for markets, because I don't think, you know, the capital markets want Bernie as president. So I think your point's a good one. I think that could be weighing on the dollar a little bit. Again, I don't know. And again, I don't care if the dollar stays between 95 and 100. Now, if it goes to 80, then, you know, my theory's probably at least got the timing wrong, if not completely wrong. But bouncing around between 95 and 100, I don't have a problem with that.
Brent, let's move on to slides 2 and 3 in your deck. You're talking about sovereign bond yields as well as, of course, the S&P 500, which has already made a significant correction. I think it's got still farther to go. How do you see this market?
Well, yeah, I'm going to tend to agree with you on that. The first thing I would say is, you know, just like I said with the dollar, you know, bouncing around between 95 and 100, the dollar doesn't really need to, I think the dollar is going to go back to its all-time high, but it doesn't really need to go back to its all-time high for my theory to work. Same thing with sovereign yields. You know, I have this slide up here that shows all the different sovereign yields, and the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield has been falling precipitously over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, it's still the highest of all the major sovereigns. I mean, I don't think the world is going to go to the Mexican Treasury as the, you know, as the flight to safety. I'm sorry, I just don't think that's going to happen, right? I don't think China is going to become where everybody parks their safe capital in Chinese treasury bonds. So, you know, when you look around at the major economies, the U.S. is still the highest yielding major economy. So I think, you know, that still is attractive to capital. And as capital comes into the United States, some of it's going to find its way into the treasury market, and it's going to pull yields lower. So, this idea that yields need to keep rising for my theory to work is just wrong. It helps, but it doesn't have to be that way. And then going on to slide 3 on the equity markets, you know, the last time I was here, I talked about how I've been following this long-term channel of equities for 10 years now. And then we, at the time, I think when we talked in early January, we were just barely above the top of the channel. And I said at the time that I was surprised that it got to the channel as quickly as it did, and that I had some hedges in place because I thought that we were probably going to pull back at some point. You know, and those hedges hurt me in January, or the last, I think I put it on kind of in the middle to the end of January. I did a collar on our equity portfolio, which means I sold calls and I bought puts. And, you know, for the first 2 or 3 weeks of February, it kind of went against me, but it paid off in spades in the last week. So, you know, now we've pulled back right down into the middle of that channel. I would see it as an absolute gift if we could fall another 10% and hit the bottom of that channel. I would be buying like crazy at that point. I don't think many other people would, but I'm convinced that in the years ahead, equities go higher, not because things are good, but because things are bad. I don't have time to go through my whole theory again on why that is, but again, I'm not being Pollyannish. I don't think we're having this explosion of global growth, but I think U.S. equities will rise as things get worse around the world.
Let's move on to a subject we've gotten a huge amount of listener questions about, which is gold. A lot of people are scratching their heads saying, hey, wait a minute, gold's supposed to go up when things go wrong in the world. By any measure, the COVID-19 pandemic, and it really is a pandemic at this point, even if the government doesn't want to call it one, that's a bad thing. Yet we've seen a very pronounced pullback in gold. Now, I've got my own ideas on what's causing that, but I want to hear your version.
Yeah, well, I think a couple things, you know, and again, I think everybody should own gold. It should be the cornerstone of everybody's portfolio. To not have gold in your portfolio, I think you're just missing a hugely important piece of that can be incredibly valuable. Now, where I tend to disagree with a lot of my friends in the gold world is that I actually think it can fall from time to time. You know, most people in the gold world think it's going to 5,000, 10,000, 50,000. It's going tomorrow, all the banks are going to fail, and that's going to be the end of the world. I just don't think that's the way it is. You know, gold for many people including me, is bought as insurance. And when you get into an emergency, what do? You cash in your insurance policy. And I think to a certain extent, that's what's been happening. Now, at the beginning of last week, the relative strength on gold was in the high 70s. Now, with the exception of last summer when it hit the 80s, the high 70s is the highest the relative strength has been since the highs of 2011. In other words, it was trending very, very strong. Now, it can't get much stronger. Can it get stronger? Yes, it can get stronger, but it rarely gets stronger than it was. Not only that, but there's a measure of just sentiment, retail sentiment, called daily sentiment. And you know, some people like this measure and some people hate it. For the most part, I don't think it does much good. It's a scale from 0 to 100. You know, if it's between, call it 20 and 80, I don't really pay much attention to it. But if it gets below 20 and it gets above 80, I think it has very strong predictive value. Now, last Monday, when we had the spike on last Monday and we jumped almost to the 1700 level, the daily sentiment on the Thursday before, daily sentiment was at 96. So early in the morning on Monday, the intraday daily sentiment on gold was probably in the 98 to 99 level. It doesn't go any higher than that. So again, you've got relative strength at its all-time high or near its 10-year high. You've got DSI, a measure of sentiment at basically the highest it can go. Those things on their own, they don't mean a lot. But when they all start happening together, the case for a pullback starts to pick up. And then if you look on the next page, page 6, this is the positions of the speculative traders on the COMEX. It is the highest exposure they've ever had. Now, it doesn't mean that gold can't go higher. Gold can continue to go higher. All I'm saying is you've got the speculative traders who all trade on very heavy margin in the futures market at their biggest exposure ever. You've got the relative strength at the highest it's been in 10 years. You've got the DSI as high it can possibly go. All you need is some kind of a catalyst, and that can switch things the other way very quickly. Again, if you take all these things on their own, they don't mean a lot. But when you build them up and put them together, it starts to make a better case. So then if you go to page 7, this blue line here, this is the opposite of the previous page. This is the commercial short position. So this is the mirror image of the speculative position. And it's overlaid with the price of gold in yellow and then the DSI, you know, the relative strength number next to it. It just shows you over the last 10 years, the way that these big commercial short positions typically get resolved is that the price of gold comes down and the commercials cover. Now, does it have to happen that way? No, it's possible that the commercials would have to cover and gold shoots to $2,000. That's just not typically what happens. So I guess my point is when you start adding all these things up together, you can start to make a decent case that if you get a catalyst, the price of gold is going to sell off. And that's exactly what happened. If you go to page 8, you know, I'd say the one argument I get against this page 7 with the commercial short position being big is not necessarily a good indicator, because as a percent of the open interest, maybe their overall short position is falling. Well, if you go to page 8, that's just not the case. The short position as a percent of open interest has been rising for the last month or so, and it's back near its all-time high. So again, so you've got daily sentiment at its all-time high. You've got relative strength at a 10-year high. You've got the speculators at an all-time high. And you've got the commercial short as a percentage of OI near an all-time high. Then all you need is a catalyst for a price to go back to fall. And what was it? Well, when the overall market started falling, people start getting margin calls. And when you had the gold spiked from, you know, 1600 to 1700 in 2 or 3 days, and you had people buying at 1650, 1670, 1680, and they're all buying these on futures on margin, when it starts to go against them, futures traders are not long-term traders. Futures traders are the very definition of short-term traders, and they all trade on margin. And when it starts to go to get against them, they get out. And so when they start selling, it kind of causes a cascade. And then when the rest of the market starts locking up and they start needing liquidity to cover margin calls, what gets sold? Well, the thing that has done the best over the last, you know, 6 to 9 months get sold, and that's the gold and the gold miners. Go to page 10, you can see, you know, the gold miners were a source of funds as well. The gold miners were down 15 to 20% in the last week or two. So again, it doesn't mean that gold can't go higher. Everybody should own gold, but it doesn't mean that it can't get sold from time to time. When people get into distress situations, they cash in their insurance policy, and gold is an insurance policy. So I don't think people should be very surprised by the action in gold over the last few weeks.
Now, I want to ask you a question about that, because I think this is very important to understand. There are times when things start going down because the fundamentals have changed and it's just not a good investment anymore. I see this as the exact opposite. First of all, I agree with everything that you said. The one place where we disagree is I think the equity market could have a lot farther down to go than just the bottom of the channel that you described. And if that happens, I think gold could have a lot farther to go down, just as it did in 2008, because people are selling, and you got to sell something in order to make up for your larger losses on other fronts. And people that are losing money in the stock market are selling their gold to cover their margin calls and to make up for their other losses. But here's the really important thing. The irony here is I think that actually the things that are happening, they all lead us to more tension and problems in the world. They lead us to more central bank accommodation in the future. They maybe lead us to a Democrat in the White House, which is almost certainly going to lead to more debasement of the currency as we get more monetization of social problems. All the things which ironically are pushing the price of gold down, and I think it's got farther to go, they're actually things that ultimately in the long run are going to be very gold bullish. So I see it as fantastic news for gold investors. We're likely going to get that chance that a lot of people were thinking we're never really going to get again to buy gold on the cheap. And when that opportunity comes, I think it's just an incredible buy, because everything that's going to drive the price of gold lower is bearish in the short term, but it's extremely bullish in the long term. Am I missing anything there, or is it as good? And it's the thing that it's so hard to get through, especially to newer investors. It is a godsend to long-term gold bulls that we might get a really sharp correction and an opportunity to buy lower.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in total agreement with you there, Eric. You know, I still think we're going to go back to that, you know, 1400 level, the breakout zone from last summer. Again, you know, I've said many times, I didn't think we were going to get the breakout last summer. We did get it. I continued to say through the fall, I thought we would pull back to that level. It didn't look like I was going to be right for a few months there. And listen, I might not be. Maybe we wake up tomorrow and gold's at $1,900. I don't know. But I do think my belief is that we are going to get a pull back to that range. And I think we are going to get the opportunity to buy there again. And to your point, it's all the stuff that would bring it back to that point is incredibly bullish for gold long term. And I tell people all the time that, you know, they ask me, how can you be a dollar bull in a gold bull? And I'm telling you, there is nothing that is more bullish for gold than a strong dollar. The strong dollar absolutely wreaks havoc on the entire monetary system. And if it breaks out, it may hurt gold in the short term, but it will do wonders for it in the long term.
Well, Brent, I can't thank you enough for another terrific interview. We look forward to getting you back in a month or so for another update. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast on quant and rules-based investing. Be sure to claim your free copy of their recently updated guide to the best investing books ever written at TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro guide. And if you haven't heard it yet, be sure to check out my full-length interview with Niels Kastrup Larsen on trend following strategies, which is linked in your Research Roundup email. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.